U.S. hiring slowed sharply in October, signaling the economy is cooling. And U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken visits Israel, seeking to ease the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Plus, how Americans are feeling a year out from the 2024 election.
At this point, many voters look at this election more with a sense of dread than anything. You find large number of voters who are just unhappy with both Biden and Trump's performances in office.
It's Friday, November 3rd. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. After a summer surge, the U.S. economy is cooling. The latest sign of that is the October jobs report, which showed hiring slowed sharply. The Labor Department said employers added 150,000 jobs, the smallest gain since June, and the unemployment rate ticked up a notch from 3.8% to 3.9%. Here now with more is Wall Street Journal economics reporter David Harrison. So the labor market has been a driver of economic resiliency in the U.S. Is it finally losing steam?
Well, that's the big question. Today's report suggests that, yes, in fact, it could be. But, you know, these reports are kind of volatile. They end up getting revised a lot. You know, the economy has thrown us a lot of curveballs over the last few years. So I wouldn't count it out just yet. But it's definitely, you know, if this continues, it definitely suggests that that things are cooling.
And what would that mean for the broader economy if this trend does continue?
Well, you know, a lot depends on the labor market, right? I mean, people have jobs, they can spend money, and, you know, if they don't, then they tend to pull back. So, you know, if consumer spending starts to dip as people have less money in their pockets, that could just basically bring sort of a broader slowdown in the overall economy because, you know, about two-thirds of the U.S. economy rests on consumer spending. So when consumers stop spending, that generally means that things are headed downwards.
So in so much as we can predict these kinds of things, where does this leave us potentially for the rest of the year?
If this continues, I mean, we are definitely in for a slowdown the rest of the year. Now, how quickly that slowdown goes and where it ends, that remains to be seen. But once you start slowing, it's hard to stop. And the question is, can we stop it before we get into a recession?
Wall Street Journal economics reporter David Harrison. The bad news about the labor market is good news for stocks. All three major U.S. indexes climbed today, closing out one of their best weeks of the year. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met with Israeli leaders in Tel Aviv today, urging Israel's government to protect civilians caught in the crossfire of its fight with Hamas. After the meeting, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said there would be no ceasefire until Hamas frees all hostages abducted on October 7th. Israel's military said it had surrounded Gaza City, isolating the northern part of the Gaza Strip. Our national security reporter Vivian Salama reports from Israel.
We've been traveling in Tel Aviv, meeting with Israeli government officials. Secretary Blinken met with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He met with President Herzog. And essentially, he was really trying to deliver the message again that the U.S. does support Israel's right to defend itself as it continues its offensive against Hamas in Gaza. But it also now is increasingly concerned about the humanitarian situation in Gaza and the plight of civilians there who are living in increasingly catastrophic conditions.
How is that message received?
So the Israelis keep on saying that they're trying to ensure to the best of their ability that civilians are protected. The president here in Israel showed reporters a pamphlet in English and in Arabic that were being dropped by the millions over northern Gaza, essentially telling residents it's not safe and you need to leave immediately. And they said, well, look, this shows you that we are obviously taking the safety of civilians very seriously. The problem with that is that there's nowhere for these civilians to go because much of the south where people are evacuating is also being bombed by Israel. Secondly, the infrastructure is so bad that it's very hard to get from one place to another. And third, most of the safe zones that have been created in Gaza are overcrowded at this point.
How long can this continue before there's a diplomatic uproar from other countries, including the U.S.?
There is already a bit of a diplomatic uproar from countries, including the U.S. The thing is that none of those countries want to undermine Israel publicly because of the fact that it's fighting this war the country has been very traumatized by the events that happened last month. The gruesome images of Hamas fighters going and butchering families in Israel as something that has now been made into a video so that Israel can show people, journalists, and allies around the world that the extent to which the country has been traumatized so that no one will push back on the fact that it has a right to defend itself. That being said, because of the extent of the humanitarian catastrophe we're seeing in Gaza, that has made allies very uncomfortable to the point that they say, you know, we definitely support Israel's right to defend itself. And so, you know, Israel is going to have to figure out a balancing act at some point. It relies heavily on assistance from the United States and other countries who have been supporting it. And, you know, that's not going to go anywhere. But it also then kind of gives them a say in how this plays out. And so those conversations are getting a little bit tougher as the days go on and the war goes on. So we'll see where it goes from here.
That's Wall Street Journal national security reporter Vivian Salama. Meanwhile, the leader of Hezbollah, the Lebanese militant group backed by Iran, vowed to step up pressure on Israel, but said he doesn't plan on waging a large-scale attack now. Hassan Nasrallah, Hezbollah's secretary general, spoke for the first time since the Hamas attacks that killed 1,400 people in southern Israel and sparked a war in Gaza. Israel and Hezbollah have been exchanging fire across Israel's northern border amid concerns of a widening war in the region. Coming up, we are just about a year away from the 2024 U.S. presidential election, where the frontrunners stand heading into a likely rematch. That's after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Believe it or not, come Sunday, we will be just a year away from the 2024 election. And once again, a deeply divided nation is looking toward another likely matchup between President Biden and former President Donald Trump. But while it might feel like we're stuck in a political loop, a lot has changed since 2020. Joining me now with more is Wall Street Journal White House reporter Ken Thomas. So Ken, eyes are on another potential Biden-Trump matchup. Let's talk about where each of them stands, starting with Biden. How is he heading into a 2024 rematch with Trump?
Well, right now, President Biden has real vulnerabilities. Polling shows significant doubts about his ability to do the job at age 80. He's going to be turning 81 later this month. And there are a large number of voters, including Democrats, who don't want him to run for re-election. Most voters don't approve of his handling of the economy. And there's just a lot of uncertainty right now around the world with the wars in Ukraine and now in Israel. That said, Biden has control of the Democratic nomination. His party is supporting him. He now has a nominal primary challenge in New Hampshire in the form of Congressman Dean Phillips of Minnesota. But by and large, the party is supporting him, and he is in a very strong position to reclaim the nomination.
Let's talk about Donald Trump, now the subject of several criminal investigations, which in some cases has bolstered support among his base. How is he looking heading into 2024?
Well, right now, the primary is really his to lose. Trump has consolidated his support among a lot of Republicans throughout this process. He has a challenge in the form of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley. But right now he's running very strongly in the opening states of Iowa and New Hampshire. The Trump campaign is looking to score some real decisive wins in the first Republican contests. And the goal is to lock up the nomination by Super Tuesday in early March. But on the flip side, Trump will have to be spending a lot of time in courtrooms next year because of these indictments. You know, for example, he has a March 4th trial date in the federal case in Washington. That's just the day before Super Tuesday.
So at the start of our conversation, we alluded to that sort of political deja vu or loop that a lot of us might feel like we're in. I think that's a good place to close as well. Where does all this leave American voters?
I think at this point, many voters look at this election more with a sense of dread than anything. You find large number of voters who are just unhappy with both Biden and Trump's performances in office. They both have high disapproval ratings. And there's this sense when you talk to voters that they would just like to see other options, other candidates. And that is in part giving an opportunity for some third-party candidates. Both major party campaigns know that it just does not take much to change the outcome in a state like Pennsylvania or Wisconsin or Arizona. A few thousand votes in these states could be the difference between winning and losing. So that third party factor will certainly be a big part of this story next year.
I've been speaking with Wall Street Journal White House reporter Ken Thomas. Thank you so much for joining me, Ken.
Thanks.
In other news, the shipping and logistics giant Maersk said today that it would cut more than 10,000 jobs as a pandemic-fueled cargo boom has ended, leaving the industry with a surplus of ships and sharply lower freight rates. Maersk, which is a bellwether for global trade, saw its third quarter profit plummet to $521 million, down from $8.88 billion last year. And Amazon founder and former CEO Jeff Bezos is moving to Miami after almost three decades in Seattle, Washington, where the online retailer grew into one of the world's biggest companies. In a post on Instagram last night, Bezos said he wanted to be close to his parents. He also mentioned that his spaceflight company, Blue Origin, is increasingly shifting its operations to Cape Canaveral on Florida's East Coast. Bezos joins a growing number of billionaires moving to the Sunshine State, which doesn't have a state income tax. And finally, daylight saving time strikes this Sunday. Americans in most states will turn their clocks back 1 hour, which means the sun will set earlier. For an estimated 5% of them, according to the American Psychiatric Association, that can bring about seasonal affective disorder, a depression that can impact mood, relationships, and work. Turning Point's columnist Claire Ansberry explains what it does to the body and how you can fight back.
The number of daylight hours we have really kind of affects our brain chemistry. When the receptors in our eyes get less sunlight, they send a message to the brain to begin producing more of the melatonin, which is a sleep-related hormone, and less of the serotonin, which enhances our mood and controls our appetite. So people really have to anticipate the change and try to do what they can to get more natural sunlight. You could put your desk by the window, your exercise machine, even go out and sit on the porch. And there are special lamps that sort of simulate more daylight hour without the harmful ultraviolet. Focus on maintaining a schedule, your sleep schedule. Lean into the changes. You know, it's going to get dark earlier. So if you like, you could light candles in the house to make things feel cozier.
And of course, if seasonal depression is serious enough, that could be a good time to call a doctor or a mental health professional. And that's what's news for this week. Today's show was produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé. What's News is hosted by me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Luke Vargas. Additional support this week from Keith Collins. Our supervising producers are Sandra Kilhoff and Michael Kosmides. Aisha Al-Muslim is our development producer. Scott Salloway and Chris Sinsley are our deputy editors. And Philana Patterson is The Wall Street Journal's head of news audio. We'll be back with a new show on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.